Welcome to Defenders, the teaching class of Dr. William Lane Craig. Today, The Doctrine of God, Part 14. For more information and resources, go to reasonablefaith.org.
We've been talking about divine omniscience, and we come now to two problems raised by the subject of divine omniscience. The first one is the problem of divine foreknowledge and human freedom. The difficulty here is that if God knows everything in advance that's going to happen, then that means that he knows every free choice that you're going to make. But if that's true, then isn't everything fated to occur? If God knows in advance, for example, that Peter will deny Christ three times, as Jesus predicted he would, then when the time comes around, isn't it necessary that Peter deny Christ three times? Since God cannot be mistaken, and God has already predicted and foreknows that Peter will deny Christ three times, then it follows that Peter must deny Christ three times. In other words, divine foreknowledge of the future is said to lead to fatalism, that everything that happens, happens necessarily. Everything is fated to occur. Now, some Christian theologians have actually agreed with this point of view. Martin Luther, for example, thought that simply in virtue of foreknowing everything that will happen, everything was fated to occur and would happen necessarily. These theologians equate divine foreknowledge with divine foreordination. If he foreknows it, then in virtue of foreknowing it, it is foreordained and therefore must come to pass. Thus, even the fall of man on this view would be something that was foreordained. Since God knew in advance that Adam and Eve would fall into sin, it follows that they were fated to. Necessarily, they fell into sin, and that therefore the fall of man was foreordained as well as foreknown. It seems to me, however, that this argument for theological fatalism is a mistaken argument. It's a fallacious argument. Indeed, before we... let me give you the argument. Here's basically how it goes. Number one, necessarily, if God foreknows X, and X can be any sort of event that you want to imagine in the future, necessarily, if God foreknows X, then X will happen. Because, after all, if it is foreknown, then that means that it is true that it will happen. And so, necessarily, if God foreknows X, then X will happen. Premise two, God foreknows X. God foreknows everything that's going to happen, and therefore he foreknows X will happen. And it's said to follow from this, three, therefore, necessarily, X will happen. But if X happens necessarily, then that means everything is fated to occur, and therefore there is no freedom. So, necessarily, if God foreknows X, then X will happen. Two, God foreknows X. Three, therefore, necessarily, X will happen. Now, it seems to me that this argument for theological fatalism is fallacious. And before I explain why, let me just make a general observation. This argument has got to be fallacious. It has to be wrong, because fatalism posits a constraint upon human freedom which is completely unintelligible. You see, God's knowledge is not thought to be the cause of what will happen in the future. The claim is not that God's knowing about something causes X to happen. The event itself may be entirely uncaused. It could be a free event, or it could be some quantum event that is completely causally indeterminate. So that the fatalist is not saying that God's foreknowledge of some event is the cause of the event, but in that case, if the event is causally undeterminate, then how can God's merely knowing about it in advance constrain it in any way? Imagine that X is some uncaused event in the future. We're to think, apparently, according to the fatalists, that if God knows about it in advance, then somehow X, even though it's causally undetermined, is going to necessarily occur. It's constrained to occur. But now suppose God doesn't know about X. Let's imagine God doesn't have foreknowledge about X. What's changed? X is still the same uncaused event. God doesn't know about it. And now all of a sudden the constraint is supposed to have vanished. It happens contingently. It doesn't happen necessarily. But whether God knows about it or not is just causally irrelevant to whether X occurs. So what is this mysterious constraint called fate that God's knowledge puts upon the event? I can't see that there is any sort of constraint. So the argument itself has to be fallacious because fatalism posits a constraint upon events which is completely unintelligible, being non-causal in nature. And in fact, this argument as it stands is fallacious. It commits a fallacy in modal logic. Modal logic is the logic of necessity and possibility. And you see that that's what's operative in this argument. Necessarily, if God knows that X will happen, then X will happen. Then the second premise, God foreknows X. And then three, necessarily, X will happen. This has the logical form, necessarily, P implies Q, P, and therefore, necessarily, Q. Necessarily, P implies Q, P, therefore, necessarily, Q. The problem is this commits a fallacy in modal logic. From the two premises, necessarily, P implies Q, and P, it doesn't follow that necessarily Q. That is just fallacious. What does follow from premises 1 and 2? All that follows from necessarily if God foreknows X, then X will happen, and God foreknows X, is X will happen. But it doesn't follow that X will necessarily happen. To think that commits a fallacy in modal logic. So from the fact of God's foreknowing X, it follows that X will happen, but not that X will happen necessarily. X could fail to happen, and then if it were, God's foreknowledge would have been different. So the argument as it stands simply commits a fallacy in modal reasoning. Now, I see a couple of hands here, so let's take a question first from Liz.
Okay, I have two questions. The first one's kind of short. Could you just explain modal logic one more time?
Modal logic is the logic of possibility and necessity, having to do with what is possible or what is necessarily true.
All right.
And that's what's operative in this this argument.
Now, when you're saying that because you're saying that it would have happened, if it would have happened differently, God would have foreknown it,
right.
Is that any way related? I mean, I know you're for the A theory. I'm undecided personally. But wouldn't that kind of attest to the B theory where tenses are just illusions?
No, I don't think this is dependent on your theory of time, Liz. Whether you think that all events in time are equally real or you think only present events in time are real, I think is irrelevant to this fallacy. The argument is just modally fallacious, and if X were not to happen, then God would not have foreknown it. He would know something else. So what we want to say, I think, here is that God's knowledge, though chronologically prior to the event foreknown, the event foreknown is logically prior to God's knowledge. I'll repeat that. God's knowledge is chronologically prior to the event. First God foreknows it, then the event happens. So God's knowledge is chronologically prior to the event, but the event is logically prior to God's foreknowledge, in the sense that whichever way the event goes, God's foreknowledge will follow it, so to speak. If X happens, then God will foreknow that X will happen. If X were to fail to happen, then God will foreknow that X will fail to happen. So God's knowledge is sort of like an infallible barometer of the weather. If an infallible barometer will tell you with infallible correctness which way the weather will be, but the barometer doesn't determine the weather, right? The weather determines the barometer. From the barometer's reading, you can know how the weather will be, but the barometer isn't what determines the weather. It's quite the other way around. And something like that is the case with foreknowledge, too. It's X that is logically prior to what God knows. It's not that what God knows is logically prior to X. What God knows is only chronologically prior to X. Okay, there was another question, I think. Yes, Colbert?
Bill, I've spent a lot of time dealing with this with my Calvinist friends, and I, to try to understand where their point of view, I think the best that I can come up with is that they're looking at God as the maker, as the manufacturer,
yes.
So that, you know, it would be like someone, like in our idea of planned obsolescence, you know, manufacturers will make something. And it will only last, you know, a car will only last 100,000 miles, and then you have to replace the engine. It will fail. Or, you know, conversely, they're building something for a space shuttle, and it has to last for 30 years. So they build it with an incredible quality, so it will perform and last the life of the mission. So as best I understand it, you know, it's not only God's omniscience, but it's his manufacturing
right.
aspect that he makes it happen.
That's absolutely correct. The strong Calvinist doesn't say that foreknowledge equals foreordination. Just because God foreknows it, therefore it's foreordained to happen. The Calvinist doesn't say that. Rather, what the Calvinist says is that foreknowledge is the result of foreordination. It's because God makes it happen that he foreknows that it will happen. So the Calvinist bases foreknowledge on God's causal foreordination of events. God is the one who is the cause of everything that happens in the world. He has decreed what will happen in the world, and that's how he foreknows that it will happen. Do you see the difference? So the Calvinist is not a fatalist. Fatalism, as I say, posits a constraint on human freedom which is non-causal and therefore unintelligible. There is no such thing as fate. But the Calvinist isn't guilty of that because the Calvinist does posit a causal constraint on what happens in the world, namely God, as you put it, is the manufacturer. God is the cause of everything that happens, and that's how he knows that it will happen. So I think we can set the Calvinist view aside for now. We can talk about that when we come to the doctrine of providence and how does God causally interact with the world. What we're dealing with here is not the Calvinist. We're dealing with that person who is a theological fatalist, who thinks that if God foreknows everything that will happen, then just in virtue of knowing about it, there's some kind of mysterious constraint that makes everything happen the way God foreknows it. Ted.
Excuse me. I know back at the end of Genesis, Joseph is talking to his brothers there at the very last chapter, and he says, what y'all did, y'all intended it for evil, but it was God who brought me here. It was him. And that kind of makes me think. I'm on the B side, I believe it was, when we had the A and B is about God. To me, it seems to me like that God is outside of time in the essence that he is on both ends of it at the same time. He's at before the beginning, and he knows the end from the end. And so it's not so much he's looking forward and knowing what's going to happen. From God's standpoint, he's basically looking back and saying, okay, that happened, this is going to happen. I don't believe that God controls what I do, but I do believe that he knows every response that I will ever have to any situation and exactly how he will deal with my responses to that. That's already been done from God's standpoint.
Okay.
But I don't think he causes me to do it. I just think that he is, you know, around it.
All right. What Ted has pointed out rightly, is that some people would try to escape theological fatalism by denying that God literally foreknows things. Namely, God is timeless. He is beyond time, And so he doesn't literally know about things in advance. That presupposes that God is in time. But if God is timeless, then God doesn't literally foreknow things, and therefore, premise two, that God foreknows X is literally false because he doesn't really foreknow anything. I don't think, Ted, that really gets around the argument, because even if it is true that God is timeless, you still can generate an argument for theological fatalism by saying something like this. It is now true that God timelessly knows that Peter will deny Christ three times. But if it is now true that God timelessly knows that Peter will deny Christ three times, then necessarily Peter will deny Christ three times. You can't get around it just by putting God outside of time. Indeed, if God is outside of time and knows that Peter will deny Christ three times, and a person in advance of that event knows that's now true, it looks like Peter's decision is just as fated as it would be if God's knowledge were in time. So I don't think that postulating divine timelessness really gets at the heart of the problem. I think the real heart of the problem is this logical fallacy that the argument makes. Let's see, Susie had a comment.
Just a question of definition again.
All right.
I'm a visual person. I can see in modal logic, you said that was the logic of possibility and necessity.
Right.
I can see possibility. What's a necessity? But don't say P or Q. Say something real.
Well, okay. For example, let me give you some examples of, say, necessary truths. 2 + 2 = 4 is necessarily true. It's wrong to torture a child for fun. That's necessarily true. If it is raining, then it is raining. That's necessarily true. If something has a shape, it has a size. That seems to be a necessary truth. So there's all kinds of truths that aren't just contingently true, but they seem to be necessarily true. Right, the statement, it is raining, is not necessarily true, is it? That's contingent. Sometimes it's not raining. We can imagine possible worlds where it never rains. But the tautology, if it is raining, then it is raining. That's a tautology. That's necessarily true. That just says, if P, then P. Right? So tautologies are necessarily true. And there are things that are true by definition that are necessarily true. If Jones is a bachelor, Jones is unmarried. Well, by the definition of what a bachelor is, that's follows, so that's necessarily true. So what the argument does is it posits a necessary truth, namely, necessarily if God foreknows X, then X will happen. And that is necessarily true. And then a contingent truth, God foreknows X, and then it infers from that a necessary truth, therefore necessarily X will happen. And that commits a fallacy. You can't infer a necessary truth from these two premises. All you can infer is the contingent truth that X will happen. Yeah, Bob?
Yeah, Bill, an argument you might give to someone who holds this view is that the best football team in the country plays the worst. And everybody in the stadium knows the outcome, and everybody that knows anything about football knows the outcome, and sure enough, it's 100-0 or what have you. Now, the question is, how did they cause that? Now, the only attack on that example might be to say, well, yeah, but their knowledge, even though it was 99.99%, it wasn't 100%, and God's it's 100%. But even so, I don't know that that detracts too much from that argument.
Oh, I don't think it does at all, because certainty is simply a property of persons. It's not a property of propositions. Propositions are either necessary or contingent, but it's people that are certain. And so whether you have certain knowledge is just a psychological state. It's not a property of the proposition itself. And so I think you're quite right. Your illustration illustrates the point that merely knowing the outcome of the game doesn't do anything to make it happen. And that's my point about this fatalism just being unintelligible. The argument has to be wrong because the constraint that it postulates on events is unintelligible, being non-causal. Now, let me make this addendum. Theological fatalists know this. in the literature, they're well aware of this. And so what they try to do is to amend the argument to make the second premise necessarily true. Necessarily, God foreknows X, and from that, then it does follow logically and correctly that therefore necessarily X will happen. But then the question is, well, wait a minute. Now, why think now the second premise is true? Because it doesn't seem that it's necessary that God foreknow X. He could know something else instead of X. He could know that non-X will occur rather than X. And what the theological fatalist will say here is, well, the necessity that I'm talking about is not logical necessity. It's the necessity of the past. We have a grasp of this when we say, don't cry over spilled milk, or that's water under the bridge. There's a sort of sense in which the past is necessary. And it's that sense in which it's necessary that God foreknows X, because God has known about it from all eternity. The problem is, no philosopher has ever been able to give an adequate explanation of what this peculiar type of necessity is on which it turns out that God's foreknowledge is temporally necessary. The most adequate accounts that I have seen of this so-called temporal necessity, it turns out that God's foreknowledge is not temporally necessary, even though it's in the past. It's not true that God foreknows X. We have the ability to act in such a way that if we were to act differently, then God would have known differently, even though that knowledge is in the past. So, although theological fatalists are aware of this logical mistake, I think their attempts to amend the argument and to make it valid have been unsuccessful, because nobody has ever been able to explain a sense of temporal necessity according to which God's beliefs about the future turn out to be temporally necessary. Now, is there any comment or question about that point?
Basically, I was hoping you could put up that diagram you had with the ends and P's.
Could you speak more directly into the mic?
Excuse me. I was hoping you could put up that diagram about the ends and the P's that you did.
Yes.
And show how they relate to each one of those things better, because I think it would help me understand it anyway better. I don't know.
Okay. The way you would symbolize the argument is necessarily P implies Q, and then the original argument just says P, and then it infers, therefore, necessarily, Q. Now, the amended argument says necessarily P, and that makes the argument valid. But then the question is two true? Is it true that necessarily P? And it doesn't seem to be. God's foreknowledge of the future is not something that is temporally necessary. Okay, George Weaver here has a comment.
Bill, my question is about open theism.
Yes.
As I understand it, that solves the problem by saying that God does not foreknow free human actions, but attempts to preserve omniscience by saying, well, it's not possible to foreknow free actions before they're made.
Yeah.
I know you have a dim view of open theism, but do you think that's a possible solution, or does that forfeit orthodoxy?
I don't think that open theism does solve the problem, George. Let's understand what the open theist says. The open theist thinks that theological fatalism follows from divine foreknowledge. So he will deny premise two, that God foreknows X. He says that it's not true that God must know everything in the future. And so he offers a revisionary definition of omniscience. Now, you'll recall we argued that if God is omniscient, then he must know all true propositions. That's what omniscience means, to believe and know only in all true propositions. But the open theist says, no, to be omniscient is not to know all propositions. God only needs to know those propositions that it's logically possible to know. And it's not logically possible to know propositions about the future, and therefore it's not an inhibition upon God's omniscience if he doesn't know these. And I think that what you can show, George, and I try to do this in my little booklet, What Does God Know?, that even if you give the open theist his revised definition of omniscience, namely God knows everything that's logically possible to know, it turns out that it's still logically possible to know future contingent events like human choices. They're still logically possible to know. And therefore, on their own definition, it turns out that God doesn't know everything that's logically possible to know. So that it does, I think, represent an attenuation of omniscience that is unacceptable. It means that God's not a perfect being, that he's not omniscient, even on their own definition, which I don't accept. I think their definition is wrong. But even given their definition, that God knows everything that's logically possible to know, it is logically possible to know future contingent propositions, as we've seen, and therefore it turns out that their view denies divine omniscience, which I take to be unacceptable because it means God's not a perfect being. And as I say, I lay this out in more detail in the booklet, What Does God Know? And I think also in the chapter on omniscience in Philosophical Foundations for a Christian Worldview. Here's a question down here. Ben?
Particularly on the B view of time, are we seeing God's foreknowledge as a deduction from what is in the present or something more direct? Because it seems to me if his foreknowledge is a deduction, you at least open the path for a sort of something akin to a material determinism that, you know, what is going to produce. So you're getting not God's imposing it, but from the way he made the world, it's predetermined.
Here, this question isn't about how God foreknows the future. Mm-hmm. Now, I think what Ben is saying, that on a B theory of time in which the future is as real as the present, mm-hmm. and as the past.
Oh, okay. Actually, I'm in A. I may have them switch.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking on an where only the present is real.
Uh-huh. That's
is God's foreknowledge a deduction from what is present, or is it something different?
Oh. Well, clearly it's not a deduction from what is present.
Because
deduces the future from what is present, that would lead to some kind of causal determinism.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Okay.
If his knowledge of the future is based on inferring, well, here's the present state of affairs and causes,
mm-hmm.
then that would mean everything's causally determined to happen. So the question of how God knows the future is a quite different question than the one mm-hmm. we're concerned with here. What we're concerned with here is just this idea that if God knows everything that will happen, then does everything happen necessarily? And what I'm suggesting is that there's no good reason to think that that's the case. That quite the contrary, things can happen however the causes, in this case human free choices, want them to be, but whichever way they go, God will have foreknown that. Because the events are logically prior to what God foreknows, even though his knowledge is chronologically prior to the events. Yes, here's a question here.
How does all of this tie in with the concept of prophecy? The example I'm thinking of would be if you take Jonah. He was told that he was going to follow God's very specific plan, and he intentionally went away from that, went on the other side of the known world from it. But because God had foretold it, it almost necessarily came into being.
Well, actually, that's not true in the Jonah passage. As we said last week, Jonah was commanded to preach, yet 40 days in Nineveh will be overthrown. But what happened was they all repented, and so the prophecy didn't come true. So, in fact, that's a case of just the opposite, where it seems that what God gave through Jonah was not foreknowledge of the future, but just a forewarning about what would happen if they didn't repent. A better example would be the one I gave, Jesus' prediction of Peter's denying him three times. And what this means is, it has very peculiar implications. What this means is that as Peter stood there in the courtyard of the high priest, he had the ability to do something such that if he had done it, Jesus would not have made that prophecy. He doesn't have the ability to falsify Jesus' prophecy because Jesus is infallible. But as he stood there in the courtyard, he had the ability to do something, namely affirm Christ, which was such that if he had done it, then it would never have been true that Jesus made that prophecy. So there's a, it's kind of like time travel. Foreknowledge and time travel are very similar to each other. The time traveler has the ability to do something such that if he did it, the past would have been different. And similarly with foreknowledge, we have the ability to do things such that if we were to do them, God would have foreknown differently and not given the prophecy. And so the prophecy would have been different. So that's why, as I say, the fatalist has never been able to enunciate a sense of the necessity of the past on which God's knowledge and prophecies turn out to be temporally necessary. They're like events that are dependent upon the time traveler's activities. The time traveler has the ability to act in such a way such that the past would have been different. And similarly, we have the ability to act in such a way that if we were to act that way, the past would have been different with respect to what God foreknows and may have prophesied. Okay, well, with that, we will conclude next week. We'll look at the second problem, which is God's hypothetical knowledge of what would happen if something else were to happen.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig. For more, go to reasonablefaith.org.